often refers to life as a foot race. We're not only focused on crossing the finish line, but before doing so, we're especially intent on passing the baton from one generation to the next. Welcome to Insight for Living, featuring another message in Chuck Swindoll's five-part series called Creating a Legacy. Originally delivered at a beautiful mountain retreat center in Northern California, you'll likely notice a more relaxed approach to our subject today. Based on our study in Acts chapter 18, Chuck will cite six marks of an effective mentor. He's titled today's message, Creating a Legacy of Mentoring.
In the creating of a legacy, which has been our theme through this conference, it is important to remember that it doesn't stop with you. It is like a relay. You've received the baton, and you've been running with it, and you are also in the process of passing it on. From mentors, we feel life. We feel its edges. From mentors, we learn dimensions of life we would have missed. We come to appreciate things that we would have passed by too hurriedly. Now, in light of our time and in light of my desire to communicate these very important principles, I want to reduce my thoughts to six marks of a good mentor. I don't often ask people to do this, but I'm going to directly ask you today to take notes, to write down the six marks of a mentor based on the 18th chapter of the book of Acts. The 18th chapter of the book of Acts is a wonderful story of the gospel as it continues to spread, in the words of F.F. Bruce, like a spreading flame. Please notice the opening of this 18th chapter, and I know we're beginning in the middle of the story, but that's the way it goes today. After these things, that is, all of the things that had occurred recorded in the previous section, after these things, he, that's Paul, left Athens and went to Corinth. By the way, no church was established in Athens. Athens was what some would call an evangelistic failure. So Paul leaves, I rather suspect, pretty low. He's given it his best, and he is coming into Corinth with a memory of something less than what he had wished in Athens. He went to Corinth. He found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius, that's the emperor, Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them. Paul came to Aquila and Priscilla. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working, for by trade they were tent makers. First mark of a good mentor. Because a mentor cares, he stays close. A mentor doesn't keep himself aloof, doesn't operate from a distance. He's willing to be known. She is willing to be known. A mentor gets up close and personal. Now, please observe how things unfolded. When Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul began devoting himself completely to the word, solemnly testifying to the Jews Jesus was the Christ. But when they resisted and blasphemed, this is the first group they're meeting with, he shook out his garments and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I'm clean. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." From there, or then, he left there and went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God whose house was next to the synagogue. Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, believed in the Lord with all his household. Many of the Corinthians, when they heard, were believing and being baptized. So we've got some good stuff going here. We've also got some conflict unfolding. The synagogue doesn't want to hear what he has to say. There's resistance. Paul gets his fill of it, finally says, I'm finished with you. We're going to go to those who are ready to listen. And there's a time for that as well in ministry. We won't go into that. But let me bring up the second mark of a good mentor. Because a mentor is devoted to the scriptures, he talks straight. He speaks the truth. Because a mentor is devoted to the scriptures, he talks straight. He speaks truth. I left out something important that I want to go back to in that first one, and I'm going to pick it up now in the second and carry it through. There are benefits that come from these marks, and so let me give you the benefit of the first. Because a mentor cares, he comes up close, he stays close. This makes one being mentored feel valued. This makes the one being mentored feel valued. Mentors are known for helping the one being mentored to feel valued. You feel stronger. You feel trusted. You feel more confident. You feel like he can rely on you. You begin to benefit from that by feeling valued. Second point here, because a mentor is devoted to the scriptures, this prompts the one being mentored to become stronger. As your mentor begins to talk straight and speaks truth, not only to you but to others, you're strengthened. If you're given toward being a bit of a wimp under pressure and you have a mentor who is strong of heart, your wimpiness begins to fade. And there's something about rubbing next to one who isn't afraid that builds into you a sense of strength, and you will hold up. Most of us getting started lack courage. We lack confidence. We're a little insecure. We're not sure of our gifts. And a mentor who comes on the scene in our lives helps us know this is an area of giftedness. You're good at this. Or you discover it, whether he points it out or not. And that makes you stronger. Now, let's press on with the story. Lord said to Paul in a vision, a night by a vision, do not be afraid any longer. Go on speaking and don't be silent. I'm with you. No man will attack you in order to harm you, for I have many people in this city. Notice now, he settled there a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. Third mark of a good mentor. Because a mentor takes the long view, he hangs in there with you. Because a mentor takes a long view, he hangs in there with you. This encourages the one being mentored to become more faithful. A good mentor doesn't cut and run in the face of a challenge. You see that. You admire that. You think, if I were in his shoes, I don't know what I'd do. But you sit quietly and you watch as he hangs in there. If he's a pastor, he sticks it out through the years. He doesn't run at the first sign of conflict. He wisely works his way through the conflict. If he's a faculty member, he doesn't quit just because the classes are reduced in number or the budget is assaulted in a bad year. He's a husband or a wife, doesn't leave the partner just because things get hard. And you witness that. Paul stayed a year and a half. Verse 18, he remained many days longer. See that? A mentor has staying power. You can count on them. It doesn't mean they never move. It means they're not restless. They're not looking for a reason to escape the troubles. They'll hang in there. And mentoring, part of mentoring is passing along how you've been able to do that. And if you're in the presence of one and you have the opportunity, ask them, how do you do that? I know the flack's going on right now. I know it's hard for you right now. I know things are tough. I know you're going through a real difficult time physically with your children. Or maybe one of their children left the nest and and it's gone wild, and you watch your mentor walking through that time, and you talk to them, find out what it is that holds them there, holds them together. It helps you become more faithful when the same sort of thing happens in your life. Now, finally, Paul is led to leave Corinth, and on his way back to Jerusalem, he passes through Ephesus. Don't miss a detail here in verse 18 that Luke adds. Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren. That means he left Corinth. He put out to sea for Syria, and with him, note, were Priscilla and Aquila. Verse 19, they came to Ephesus. Look at that. He took Priscilla and Aquila with him. He's lived with them for over a year and a half. And now that the Lord's leading him on, he takes them with him. Sometime that will occur. You become so close to the one mentoring you, when they move along, they want you to move with them. If you're in association with them in work or in ministry, sometime the one who is the mentor will have such a relationship with you that by then they'll say, when I move, I'd like you to move with me. I'd like you to be a part of where I'm going. Paul says this to them, come with me. So they come with him. They leave Corinth. And they, in turn, verse 20 and following, or verse 19, they came to Ephesus. He left them there. He left them in Ephesus. He himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews, and they pled him to stay longer, and he couldn't. He's on a time frame that doesn't allow it. So he says, I will return to you, verse 21, if God wills. And then he sets sail from Ephesus, and he's on his way back to Jerusalem. But he leaves them there. Fourth mark of a mentor. Because a mentor believes in you, he trusts you when he is not present. The he can be she all the way through this. You know that. The point is, the mentor believes in you, and because he trusts you, he's gone and has no problem continuing his trust. He trusts you when he's not present. This results in your becoming more responsible. A good mentor isn't insecure, doesn't have to be in control. He isn't controlling. As I say that, reminds me of a comment made by Southwest Airlines president at the time, Herb Kelleher. He says this about letting go of the control of his airlines. A financial analyst once asked me if I was afraid of losing control of our organization. I told him I've never had any control, and I never wanted it. Please listen to this. If you create an environment where the people truly participate, you don't need control. They know what needs to be done, and they do it. And the more that people will devote to your cause on a voluntary basis, a willing basis, the fewer hierarchies and control mechanisms you need. We're not looking for blind obedience. We're looking for people, says Herb. We're looking for people who on their own initiative want to be doing what they're doing because they consider it to be a worthy objective. I've always believed that the best leader is the best server. If you are a servant by definition, you are not controlling. And when I refer to mentoring, I'm not talking about controlling someone's life. None of my mentors, and I could name five or six here, ever attempted to control my life. Not one. I found them over and over and over again freeing me, pushing me further up that ladder or further out to sea, making it clear to me how much they believe in me, but releasing me to go as God is directing me. We do that with our children. The best example on earth of mentoring is parenting. And little by little, we let more of that string out as that kite flies higher and higher. And then there's that day you just let it go. And that kite flies on its own. Paul leaves Aquila and Priscilla at Ephesus. And in effect, they form the church at Ephesus. Now, he comes back and adds the depth and some of the theological roots they needed. But For all practical purposes, Aquila and Priscilla put down the earliest roots of the church at Ephesus. Good mentors are at heart good models of servanthood. They take joy in releasing. They stretch us, and they tutor us, and they coach us, and then they watch with delight, or they hear about the work with delight. I always hesitate to give illustrations like this, but because I know more about me than anybody here, or I'd be telling a story on you, I'll tell you what happened in my case. I had poured my heart into a sermon on the prodigal son, and we had gone through some things, and that was added to the sermon, and I really preached it with everything I had, and time passed. One day my phone rang, and it was Ray Steadman, one of my mentors, on the other end of the line. He said, "Chuck, this is Ray." He was at that time going through a real tough time with some of his daughters, and his voice kind of broke, and he said, "I've just listened to a tape someone sent me that you preached on a prodigal son." And, you know, I sudden go, "Oh, my gosh, what, did I do that, you know, like I should have? Did I miss something in there? I got Ray Steadman listening to my sermon." My comment was, "You got things better to do than that, don't you?" And he laughed, and he said, "Tell you the truth, it's the finest I've heard on the prodigal son." Oh! Man, I suddenly felt like Spurgeon. Then I think Cynthia said, "Throw out the trash, honey," and I came back to earth. There was something about knowing that my mentor would send back to me a statement of reassurance that I of all people, ministered to him in a message. And that, you know, is just the best it gets. When the one who mentored you turns and says to you how much you mean to them. And it does work like that. I'm sure the apostle, in returning to Ephesus, had a number of evenings. He said to Aquila and Priscilla, "What a great job you've done here. What fine work is underway." This adds to a sense of confidence as the mentoring goes on. Now, watch what happens. It's fascinating here. Verse 24. Paul's no longer there. He's passed beyond the scene. He's gone on to Jerusalem, and yet Ephesus and the work at Ephesus is continuing. Now watch. A Jew named Apollos, first time he's ever mentioned in the Bible, sort of comes out of the blue like a meteor across the night sky. A Jew named Apollos, Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, came to Ephesus. He was mighty in the scriptures. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord. He was fervent in spirit. Wait a minute, what a preacher. Look closely. He's Alexandrian by birth, a Jew, reared in Egypt, gone to school there. He's eloquent. He comes to Ephesus, maybe on a lark, maybe wanting to get beyond his roots from home and to share the gospel in Europe, and he's mighty in the scriptures. This young man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he is fervent in spirit. The word means boiling. He has a zeal, so there's passion in Apollos' style. Now watch. He was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John. He began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. But when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, isn't this great? They took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. What's this all about? Well, Aquila and Priscilla are still going on in the ministry at Ephesus, and along comes this hotshot from Alexandria, and they hear him speak, and he's obviously gifted and zealous and well-educated, and they listen to him, and they've got ears and minds trained by Paul. They're like Dobermans. Their ears perk up, and they listen, and they hear what isn't being said. which is a mark of discernment. You're discerning when you not only hear error, but you can tell by what isn't said that he doesn't know. And he only knew a theology that went as far as the baptism of John. He knew nothing of the work of the Holy Spirit. He knew nothing of the finished work of Christ. And they heard that. And very graciously, notice how they handled it. Rather than standing at the door and saying, "You rascal, you're about half prepared. What are you doing preaching up front? People around there, what?" They didn't do that. They said, "How about coming over to dinner?" So he comes over to their home, sits down, and they strike up a conversation with him, talk about ministry, and they get into the subject of theology, and they explain to him the way of God more accurately. They were mentored by Paul, and now they are mentoring Apollos. That says something for Apollos, that he doesn't resist their instruction. Fifth mark of a good mentor. Because a mentor is discerning, he addresses weaknesses that need to be strengthened. Because a mentor is discerning, he addresses weaknesses that need to be strengthened. Now, the benefit. This helps the one being trained to remain humble and teachable instead of arrogant. This helps the one being mentored to remain humble and teachable, realistic, instead of arrogant.
Well, we'll set aside ample time to cover points 5 and 6. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled Creating a Legacy of Mentoring. Now, to purchase all 5 sermons in this series, just go online and look for the study called Creating a Legacy at insightworld.org. Just before we hear a closing comment, I'd like to extend an offer to receive a powerful and popular booklet. It's become one of the most popular in Chuck's collection because it clearly explains what it means to have a personal encounter with God. And if you've never contacted Insight for Living before, we'd like to send you a copy. Ask for the free booklet titled Destiny. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, make your request at insight.org/destiny. I can tell you, behind the scenes, we've anticipated the month of August all year long. All of us at Insight for Living are pleased to offer you the latest biography from our teacher. This hardbound book is fresh off the press and called Abraham, One Nomad's Amazing Journey of Faith. Now, the broadcast series begins this Thursday, and we're eager to get this comprehensive hardbound book into your hands. It's yours when you give a gift toward the ministry of Insight for Living. If you're listening in the United States, ask for the biography on Abraham when you call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. Chuck?
We all love a good story, don't we? Especially when it's a true story. Few things are more engaging than tracing the footsteps of those who have gone before us. So, why Abraham? What does the life of an ancient nomad have to do with ours today? In recent years, we've witnessed the rise of what some have called radical atheism, led by authors like Richard Dawkins and the late Christopher Hitchens. They don't simply reject the existence of God. They aggressively attack belief in God as an evil that must be eradicated. Some worry about where this trend will take our civilization. Well, for what it's worth, I don't worry. While the movement might be radical, it's certainly nothing new. And besides, I peeked ahead to see how the story of humanity ends. Spoiler alert, God wins. So the question becomes, how do we, as believers in a Creator God, conduct ourselves in a world that does not accept his existence as the truth? If we rewind history back far enough, we discover a time in which virtually no one believed in God. Did you know that? Civilizations worshipped many gods of their own invention. and they concocted extreme superstitions to explain the unexplainable. But they didn't acknowledge the existence of one true creator of all things. Out of this mass of theologically aimless humanity, one man emerged who began to proclaim what many might consider radical: monotheism. Abraham not only claimed that one true creator existed and that all other gods did not, he also staked his entire life on that belief. Today, Abraham is revered by the majority of the world as the father of faith. So, why Abraham? His faith journey tells us about our own. And while each person's journey is unique, Abraham blazed the trail for the rest of us. Abraham has much to teach anyone, even an atheist, who wants to know the one true creator.
When you give a donation to Insight for Living, request this new biography on Abraham by Chuck Swindoll. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org. Insight for Living enjoys a strategic partnership and a cherished relationship with our monthly companions. A monthly companion agrees to give a donation every month, providing strength and stability to our ministry. To become a monthly companion today, go to insight.org/monthly companion. I'm Dave Spiker. Chuck Swindoll concludes the series on creating a legacy tomorrow on Insight for Living.
In the preceding message, Creating a Legacy of Mentoring, was copyrighted in 2004, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.